Recording in progress.
I don't think it is, but it's really encouraging to see the numbers today. First of all, I want to ask you to remember Sister Kimberly in our prayers. Kimberly, the lady who visited us from time to time in the past.
Gibson.
She's still recovering from open heart surgery. She still has some way to go, so please keep her in your prayers. I just want to give you a brief update on myself, because I know I haven't been forthcoming exactly what has been happening to me over the past 3 weeks. And I know some of you have come to me and said, "How was the leg?" You know, because you thought the leg was the main problem, but the leg has been healed. Thank God for that. But I did have surgery on November 17th for a different, a different thing. And I'll explain what that is. So I had, it was a bit complicated, more complicated than I thought. I wasn't exactly sure what was happening. But I know I had this medical procedure to do. I went and I did it. And the urologist took some time to explain exactly what was happening. It seems as if when I was small, I had an accident and I got injured in the groin area. He said it could have been playing soccer or something else. I know I had a terrible accident when I was about 10. In a motor vehicle accident with a drunk driver, and that's why I don't drive. If you're drunk and offer me a ride, I won't take it. And the funny thing, you've heard me say this story before, that I damaged this hand, and for 3 weeks I kept it from my family, that this hand, I couldn't touch it because I was afraid of going to the hospital, so I didn't say anything to them. And about 5 years ago, I had to do an x-ray, and my family doctor said to me, "Oh, you had a broken hand." I said, "Broken hand? I don't remember having a broken hand." He said, "Your hand is broken." He showed up on x-ray. So I realized that at that time, I broke my hand, and I didn't realize it. Anyway, what he said to me was, I had some damage to my urethra. There's a stricture or something they call it. So it narrowed the passage of my urethra. And it formed a kidney stone. So I had to remove the kidney stone. But in order for the stone to pass through, they have to put a stent, insert a stent to allow the stones to pass through and to widen the narrowing. So for 3 weeks I've been wearing a stent. There was a catheter inserted as well before, and I tell you, it has been challenging. It's has been painful. I pass blood almost every day for 3 weeks. It has left me very weak to this day. I think I'm recovering now from it. And thank God the stent was removed on Thursday. And when the stent went, a lot of the troubles went. And that too was painful because I didn't do it on an anesthetic. I mean, when that stent came out, it was like my head was exploding. But some pain after, for the afternoon I went home, it was all pain, but thank God since that I've been feeling much better. The pain is gone. So my mucosa is now restoring my strength. So if you see me sit on this stool, maybe I feel a little weak. But thank God for your prayers. Thank you for your prayers. And just appreciate that. Brethren, the Jesus of the Bible, we want to talk about him today. Not the Jesus of December 25th, but the Jesus of the Bible. Because, you know, I've been thinking this week about that. And there are two opposites in many respects. The Jesus of the Bible and the Jesus of Christmas. Well, the Jesus of the Bible, apparently in the theology of many Christians, does not observe his festivals, the ones he calls the feasts of the Lord. Leviticus 23 outline all of them. He created them, but the Christmas, the Jesus of Christmas, was not observed that. You realize that? No. They observe Christmas. Not the very own festival he created, this Jesus observed. He created his appointed times. He kept them, his followers kept them. And he warned the nations that you will have to keep them at some point in the future when his kingdom is established. The Jesus of the Bible promises people that they're going to heaven. That's what the Jesus, Jesus of Christmas promises people that they're going to heaven. But the Jesus of the Bible doesn't promise people that. What does he promise people? The kingdom of God reigning on earth. Is that, am I wrong? No. The Jesus of Christmas sent people to an everlasting hellfire. No, the Jesus of the Bible says there will be a lake burning with fire and brimstone, described in the scriptures as the second death. That's what the Bible promises. The Jesus of Christmas was born on December 25th. But the Bible never gives a date of the birth and doesn't care to give one. The Jesus of Christmas has the biggest celebration on earth. The biggest birthday celebration on earth. But the Jesus of the Bible says, no, observe my death. The Passover. It's only a tiny minority of people observe. Very small. The Jesus of the Bible promises to rapture people to heaven. No? You're following me? But the Jesus of Christmas does. The Jesus of the Bible said in Revelation 3:10, I will be with you during the hour of tribulation when it comes on the earth. But the Jesus of Christmas is the only way going to rapture you to heaven. The Jesus of Christmas promises Christians that when they die, they go to paradise the same day. The thief on the cross they use. But after Lazarus died, Jesus called him with a loud voice, come out of your sleep. So Lazarus was not in paradise. So we see all of these contrasts for what people believe from what the Bible says. And brethren, the roots of paganism has a lot to do with that. Because it's embedded, those roots are embedded in Christian thought, and even long before Christianity, from the going back to the days of Israel, they started to infiltrate human belief systems. And I want to touch on some of that. Today, after thousands of years, one would think it's dead and gone. But there's a term that has been coined, not by me, but by others. It's called neo-paganism. Meaning modern-day paganism. And it's alive, and it's well, alive and well in our society. In fact, we're saturated with it. If not, it's more than a religion now. You know what it is, brethren? It's a culture. Yeah. That's what it is. And if you think the person out there who is so deep into Saturnalia or Mithra's birthday, if you think you're going to change their mind, you better think again. It's cultural now. And once it's in the culture, brethren, people don't change culture. Culture is something that shapes who you are. Shapes what you eat, what you wear, and other things associated with the social development of your society and so on. So it's a cultural phenomenon now, and I'm not saying don't tell people it's wrong, but don't expect them to say, well, you know, I'm going to follow you now. Some people will get a call and they will understand, but others are just going to laugh at you. They're not going to change. It's culture. It's part of the culture. And some people will use excuses and say, oh, I'm going to use, you know, evangelize people when I meet them. And well, try. You can try. But if God doesn't open that understanding, they won't change. So the most we can do, yes, is try to educate, to tell those whom we meet that Christmas is the biggest lie of Christianity. Because don't tell your child about this Santa who doesn't exist. And don't tell your child that December 25th, Jesus, they all have some Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ was born on Christmas Day. That's a lie. And we go up the line, I'm not talking about we here, but people just don't pay attention to it. It's not true. And the sad thing, brethren, is after centuries of telling a lie, the lie becomes truth. That's what it is, you know. That's what culture is, that how culture operates. After thousands of years or hundreds of years, the lie is now truth. And this is now holy. When we know only God, being what's holy.
Hallelujah.
But the reality today is, for us, it's hard to ignore because it's in our faces. Everywhere it's in your face. You go to the supermarket, you walk to the door, you're bouncing in decoration in your face. You go into a Uber, a Christmas car, caught your ears. When you turn on the radio, it's there. You turn on don't talk about the TV because it's pure red this time of the year. It's in your face, it's all over. So it's hard to ignore it. And I know some of us here, we have family members who don't share our beliefs. You have spouses whose other spouse don't share our beliefs. And it's difficult for them, it's challenging. It's challenging. Because you have your home and you walk in there, there's a Christmas tree grinning at you. And you know that's a symbol of idolatry. But to keep the peace, you keep the peace. So some people have it easier than others. You know, but that's just the reality of what we have to expect. So there are several reasons why these non-biblical holidays have become so entrenched in our culture. And we're going to look at the more modern ones and how they've been able to gain a place in our society. What I find really disturbing, very disturbing, is that there's a trend in society, even among church people, are some church people who believe that embracing other pagan practices can be pleasing to God. Can be pleasing to God. And when they do that, brethren, they're making God a liar. Because the scriptures doesn't say, the scriptures don't say that. In December 2018, and this is what it makes it become the norm. Oh God, it's, and you know, they come up with really clever statements always for, you know, for the children, you know, bring Santa to sit on, you know, you know, several years ago, I don't think anyone here, let me see if anyone was in the church at that time. No, I don't see anybody here who was in the church at that time. Going back to the early 90s. A member of the church gave me a ride to somewhere, I don't remember. And I was in his van, and a book fell off the seat on the floor, and a picture fell out. So he was driving, and you know, I kind of bent to take over the picture. He didn't want me to take up the picture, and I said, well, I wonder what's. But my eyes are quick, you know, my eyes don't pass certain things. Just like my ears. This is a journalistic instinct, right? And I saw, can I know his daughter? I saw his daughter sitting on Santa Claus' lap. And I said, what is this? Because both parents are in early church. And I said, how could he have his daughter sitting on Santa Claus' lap and coming to worship before God? I said, it was during the Christmas season too. And I said, I just remember when I'm reading this, how influential that can be, even on people in the church. We have to stand firm with no compromise. You know, and this is and it's part of the trend that some people say, oh, well, it's for the children, it's a good time to have family. Of course, it's a good opportunity to meet family and catch up on time. But the intent says a lot. Right? And there are different situations, and some people say, you know what, if my old elderly grandparents, my elderly mom having family together and invite me over and for Christmas dinner, I'm not gonna go because I'm not gonna sit beside a pagan tree and blah blah blah. Some people have that attitude, others say, you know what, I'm just going to catch up on family time. To each his own. The intent is what is important. The intent. Are you celebrating Christmas? Or are you going for other reasons? It's up to you. But what I'm saying is when people embrace these, have these excuses that it's for children and we want to have a good time and so on. Well, you know, truth is truth and untruth and something that is untrue cannot be true. Tell your children that, you know what, Santa is false. Although I usually believe it, usually look forward to getting my gift from him, coming through the ceiling. Next morning I look up the ceiling same way and always wonder, you know. I grew up in that environment. Because if there's one thing I usually look forward to is get a new car every Christmas. But when you come into adulthood and you realize it's a lie, I find it hard even to pass it on to my children and tell them this about this man. Who is bigger than Jesus in Christmas anyway? For some children, what do you think they think about first? Jesus' birth? No. It's Santa, the man in red. Don't mean Santa is in red today, but you know. You know, yes. So all of those excuses don't make it right. In December 2018, the New York Times ran an article, The Return of Paganism. Again, I'm going to read it up. He says, in Western nations, you know, we see where in the West they say, once considered Christian, appear to be in the midst of a pagan revival. Many concepts viewed as progressive in our modern society are actually part of the re-emergence of pagan ideas. Those of us who are going to the Bible study, you know, we had one this week, we touch on, and we're going to touch on it more the next one, January 3rd, the Babylonian system, how it started, and that some of the things we're doing today came from that. Some of the pagan stuff came from that too. So one notion of that new revival that is on the rise today is the idea that God does not exist. I was listening just yesterday morning to an item from BBC where they did on church, you know, church, usually at the end of the year they have all these studies on religion and so people are reacting, and this one was done in England. And can't remember the figures right now, but the conclusion was the rising number of people who are saying that God does not exist. And church attendance, abysmally, the figures was below 7%. They're also saying the Bible is not divinely inspired. And that all religions, these are the different categories, all religions, even the pagan ones believe that they lead to the one true God. All of them, regardless. If you worship a stone, if you worship an animal, if you bow to a tree, all of them lead to the same God. all of them to the same God. I'm talking about Sri. I was appalled a few weeks ago to see some people bowing to trees. In our day and age, people bowing down to trees. There's a whole new can of worms when it comes to the environment and religion. That's a completely something. I promise I'm going to do something on that soon. But people bowing to trees, that's part of their worship. You know where tree worship coming from? Babylon. And this is where the Christmas tree comes in at some point too. They're saying that there's no absolute truth and that sin doesn't exist. It's all in the mind. And sadly, brethren, ancient pagan philosophers, they accepted some of those beliefs. And today we see them emerging or re-emerging. And with acceptance as well. In our modern society, all the sexual sins are glorified. Realize that? I challenge any one of us. You watch a movie and tell me there's no sexual sin in that movie. But they watch Survivor. Because these movies, commercial too, don't talk about that one. Do you realize that the sexual sins were integral part of pagan worship? Have you heard of the temple prostitutes? The fertility goddesses and what they did? Well, and we have a society today that glorifies sins, especially when they're sexual sins. Pedophilia? That was big in pagan worship. We have movements today who want it to be legalized. Research the Man Boy Love Association and you have some time. And they have always been advocate of legalizing that. And you also have some medical professionals who are talking about it's in the genes, they can't be cured, you can't do all of that garbage out there. It's coming from way back. It's not anything new today. They say prostitution is the oldest profession. All of them point right back to the Babylonian system. No wonder Revelation 17 talks about or describes this woman as Mistress Babylon, the mother of harlots. And as I've said this week on the Bible study, what I find hard to accept is many pronouncements that the Christian church fought so much against paganism. And I counteract that by saying, if they fought so much against paganism, how come the two biggest festivals are pagan rooted? That's the question. Historian William Durant, he said, Christianity, and I'm quoting him now, said Christianity did not destroy paganism. It adopted it. The Greek mysteries passed down into the impressive mystery of the Mass. From Egypt came the ideas of a divine trinity, the adoration of the mother and child. From Phrygia came the worship of the great mother. Christianity was the last great creation of the ancient pagan world. This is a historian, not me. The Enlightenment, a movement comprising of intellectuals, emerged in Europe in the 1700s. It was basically an attack on the God of the Bible. Most books of the Bible were spurious, and they said Jesus was not God and his resurrection was staged. Some of you are familiar with the Reformation movement. Martin Luther. But Martin Luther didn't get rid of pagan practices. It was a Reformation, yes, against certain Catholic dogma. Yes, he got rid of the indulgences of the praying to saints. the rosary and so on when the Anglican Church did its own thing. But the two biggest festivals, Christmas and Easter, were untouched. Sunday worship was left untouched as well. Pagan worshippers were known to eat unclean food, everything that moves they eat. And today, big church people who claim to be followers of Christ, they do the same thing. Christianity retained that big one too, going to heaven or hell. Those were just plucked out of those pagan belief systems. Their nirvanas and their paradise. Oh, they had all of them. So after the church was dominated by these practices, none of the leaders today are willing to touch anything and to stand up for truth. To stand up for truth. The endless excuses. What's happening today regarding some of these practices? Well, listen to this. The nation of Iceland has constructed its first temple in 1,000 years to worship the old Nordic gods Thor and Odin. A temple. Just recently. They are still going strong 1,000 years after the Viking Age. Many think that the old Nordic religion, the belief in Norse gods, disappeared with the introduction of Christianity. We've been told that. But no. They did not. They were practiced secretly and continue to be practiced under a Christian cloak in some way, incorporated in some of their belief system. So today what we have people in Denmark, some people, a minority of course, who believe in that religion and they still worship those ancient gods. Stonehenge. You realize thousands of people meet in England every year during the summer solstice at Stonehenge. And you know what they greet in? The rising sun. That's what they greet in Stonehenge. Just like the pagans of old. And we have people in our modern day society who drive to some spot on Sunday morning, purportedly during Easter, to watch this rising sun. Sunrise service. I've seen flyers all over the place come to sunrise service. To do what? Or what the rising of the sun has to do with the birth of Jesus Christ, with the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's neo-paganism. And people don't question that. They just follow the blind leading the blind. What does that have to do? The Bible gives you no such instruction. What we know from Ezekiel is the God Tammuz. You remember when he went into the temple and he saw these people? And he wondered what they were doing. Their face turned to the rising sun. And he said it was an abomination. And we have churches doing that today in the name of Yahweh. How do you explain that? No wonder we end up with Sunday as, you know, a day of worship. Because whether it was the sun god Ra or his Mitra, we have these positions where the sun continues to play an influential role. And the sun was a major figure in pagan worship. Major figure. In Scotland, performers paint themselves as red devils to entertain crowds to celebrate the ancient Celtic fire festival that goes on, has links with Halloween as well. In the UK as well, we still have people gathering to burn a wicker man. The Druids once did that. They still do it. Mitra's birthday, to an extent, some people still observe that. In Greece, people still worship Zeus and Apollo and Athena. Adherents of that still exist today. I was shocked this year when I read that a few years ago, a group of children were going to the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. That's a famous museum when it comes to pictures and photography. Sometimes you see some pictures and it's credited to Getty. They're the people responsible. And you know what they were, you know what those children were doing, brethren? They were writing prayers to Aphrodite and Venus. The Greek or Roman goddesses, that they were writing prayers to them. And they were the goddesses of what? Lust and love. This is our modern society. And of course, many just turn blind eye. How can you be writing prayers to the goddesses of prostitution and perversion? And you want to equate that with the God of the Bible? People in Eastern Europe, they still celebrate ancient fertility rites by jumping, dancing and prancing around fires. This date pre-Christianity, but they still do it. One of the fastest growing religions in the United States, you know what it is? You know, Islam is growing fast, but you know what the other big one is? Witchcraft. The Wicca religion. Witchcraft. There are statutes promoting Satanism. They appear on public grounds, so they have a right to. The U.S. Air Force has even constructed a pagan temple, you know that?
No.
Yes, for people who want to practice the Wicca religion and to go there to worship. Constitution guarantees freedom of religion. There was an ancient pagan god in Israel that caused Israel to turn away from the commandments of God and true worship. It's the pagan god Baal. Baal. And it means possessor. That's what it basically means. We read in our Bible how Gideon and Abimelech are seen as, you know, the contrast, the kind of representatives of God, Yahweh. And in this way, we can deduce from that it was a fight between the gods for Israel's fidelity. But Israel had a way of just nosy when it comes to other gods. They would get all these blessings from God, and the warnings from God, don't follow those nations. And two tools, they're in their arms. Always. But we see how Yahweh defeats Baal, and guess what happened? Israel rejects Yahweh and turns to the defeated God. The defeated God. Even when they can't see and they can't hear, they can't reason, they're not alive and they're dead, they still turn to them. We see it happening today as well. That's the contrast I want to make. They never exist. They never have life in them. They're inanimate. And people still gravitating to them today. Today. 2 Kings 10:28 tells us that Jehu destroyed Baal from Israel. But they still turn to embracing Baal. The Baal attitude still prevails. The Center for Biblical Counseling, in a recent article, says, I quote, "Modern Baals are in our churches today." Again, not my words. He said, it says, in the Bible, when the people of God flirted with the pagan culture around them, they were judged for it. They were judged for it. And that is true. Is God judging because of the pagan practices around us today? You bet he is. In Exodus 32, when Moses was late coming down from the mountain, the people got antsy and created a golden calf. They called it Yahweh. Turn back to Exodus 32. And they bowed down and they worshiped it. The center said, Christians who participate in psychology are participating in Baal worship. The writer says, I also believe that because our churches have bought into the lie of psychology, they are suffering the judgment of God. This false worship is one of the reasons our churches, and therefore our country, is in such a mess. Exodus 32. Let's read it. Let's look at it. And you tell me if you can see the parallels here. Now, when the people saw Moses delay coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as this Moses, you shall talk about Moses, this Moses, the man who has been leading them through from their days of slavery. As for this Moses, disrespect. The man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Verse 2. And Aaron said to them, and I'm surprised at Aaron. I'm really surprised at Aaron. And Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me. You wonder what has overcome Aaron here? Is this the Aaron we know and read about? So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. Now watch this. Then they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. So the golden calf that can speak and can hear, inanimate, was never born, it is he's their God now. He's their God now. But listen to this. This is very key, you know. Open our minds and ask God to open your understanding clearer. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. Imagine that. This is serious. You saw something that can't move, and you're going to build an altar before it. For what? And Aaron made a proclamation and said, this is it, brethren. Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. So we are going to honor God on this feast. We are going to create a feast to honor God. Their own feast. A man-made feast. Can we see some parallels here? So we are going to take a date. And we are going to say, yes, the Savior of the world was born on this day, and we are going to honor him on it. That's basically the same thing. I don't see any big difference. Then they rose up early, verse 6, on the next day, and they offered burnt offerings, yes. And they brought peace offerings, just like any act of worship you would do when you're honoring God. So they bring all of these things. And not only that, the people sat down to eat and drink. They had a feast, a festival. And they rose up, not only to do that, they play. So you see the big celebration here? Watch what God is going to say. Because the same argument they're using, oh, it's in honor of God and so on. Brethren, learn this, and we've said it before from this pulpit, not myself, but others. Only Yahweh determines what is holy, not man. Verse 7. As the Lord said to Moses, go, get down. It's the exclamation sign. This is serious. For your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. Wow. They are corrupt. This is not my festival. That's what he's saying. This is not me. This is not in honor of me. Give me all the burnt up. Bring all the burnt offerings you want and all the peace offerings you want. I'm not accepting it. This is not me. This is not my festival. He said they have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. What God has commanded us, brethren? He has commanded us in Leviticus 23 to observe his appointed times, the Moedim's, the annual festivals. He gives the date for them. Gave us no date for his birth. And people just can't see through that. They have made themselves a molded calf and worship it and sacrifice it to it and said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed is a stiff-necked people to this day. Now therefore, wow, I don't think God turns a blind eye to stuff like this. By the way, I'll just give a, on December 18, right, Noel?
Yes.
December 18, the church in Ocho Rios, Jamaica, they're having a panel discussion on this very subject. So I would encourage all, there's a link you can check with Noel on it. They're going to go deeper into this. I would urge all of us, or as many of us, to really watch it. I have seen this people, and indeed is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, that I may consume them, and I will, you know, make of your great nation. So his wrath is poured up on that. No, I'm not condemning people who choose to celebrate their festival. I leave that to God to be the judge of that. But I'm just issuing the warning, using this example, that God doesn't take things lightly like this. He's serious about his holy time. He still is the same God that dealt with Israel. He said, my wrath may burn hot against them and may consume them. You want to burn them up. You know, in Acts 17:24, Paul was facing a similar challenge with the people in Athens. Because Athens was known to be a city of philosophers and bright minds and idol worshippers as well. And he said, you know what? God doesn't live in houses made with human hands. He's bigger than that. He's bigger than that. 2 years ago, March 2020, as part of an exhibit celebrating the city of Carthage in Italy, a giant statue of the god Molech. You know who's Molech? The same one they check their innocent little babies and throw them in the fire as sacrifice to Molech. Well, here, this is what they do. They had an exhibit with Molech and visitors. I don't know if people have time. Here, people say they don't have time. People have time. They have time for what they want to do. Because thousands of visitors, curious, went to the Roman Colosseum to see this exhibit of Molech. This big giant exhibit of Molech. Molech. For what? For what? You know, people sometimes believe they're doing God a favor when they do certain things or make certain journeys, because to me, I will stay as far as the east is from the west or things like this. I have no interest whatsoever in seeing any Molech. Because next thing you have people born down to Molech. And I wouldn't be surprised if probably that happened. Molech is said to have boiled children alive. Alive in boils of a big bronze statue with the body of a man and the head of a bull. That was Molech. And God warned about that. Ashtoreth is a preeminent goddess in the Bible. And Sister Roland, we don't like to call these names, but we have to call them. People have to know them. Because if you know them, you might be, you know. When I was growing up, you know. Yeah, when I was growing up, I usually hear people say, make sure you learn to read and write. If you don't learn to read and write, people can write your name on a dumpling and eat it and don't even know. So we have to know these names, be aware. But she was another one, and in scripture she mentioned several times. Judges 2:13, 1 Psalm 7:3, strange gods, they refer to as strange gods. Judges 10:6, 1 Samuel 7:4, a lot of them mentioned with Baal as well. But in Israel, her worship was associated with the Sidonians. And Solomon, in his later years, we are told, went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians. That is told in 1 Kings 11:5. And Josiah, we are told as well, destroyed the cult places which Solomon had built on the Mount of Corruption, Mount of Olives at that time. No, not Mount of Olives at that time, but it referred to as that. Because that's where Ashtoreth dwelled. And there was a lot of abominations committed by her. She was worshipped in various ways, including ritual, relations, perversion, of course. And she was believed to be Baal's mother. That's the kind of link we're seeing. He was supposed to be Baal's mother. And she was also his mistress. Mother and mistress. Yes, that's how corrupted those religions were. I mean, when I say corrupted, they're really, really perverted. They practice sympathetic magic, that is, they believe that they could influence other gods by performing certain relationships. Perverted relationship. That's how depraved these religions were. And they believe a union between Baal and his mother produced fertility for some people. They believed in them and followed them. And the worshippers, once they engage in these immoral acts, the gods would join together to give them good harvest. You see what we're dealing with, brethren? We should stay far from these religions. 1 Kings 14:23 basically said it's religious prostitution. In verse 23, 1 Kings 14 says, they also build them high places and images and groves on every high hill and under every what? Listen to this. Every what? Green tree. Green tree. You know what the symbol of a green tree is? You had it in your one ear, but now it's gone. The same one that people put in a lemon house. You see how far back this is being prominently shown. How these things started. Green tree. Under every green tree. The green tree was recognized as a symbol of fertility from years ago. Years ago. So when we put one in our house and we deck it and put it upright, as Jeremiah 10 tells us, it's a symbol of idolatry. Go right back in the Bible. The green tree. Verse 24. And there were also sodomites in the land. And they did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. You see what they did all the abominations. You see, things going around today, brethren, is a cycle. It started coming back around. All the perverted sins, sexual sins, they're just coming back around. Ashtaroth, temple priest, you know what the priests are dressed, brethren? Yes. The temple priests are their male. You know what they dress? They dress as women. Ashtaroth. Anything new with what's going on today? No. The temple prostitute had intercourses with members of the church. We have to expose these things because people, I don't think people take time to figure out what was going on back then. So when we see things going on today, just look up, because your redemption is coming, because these things must happen. They must come to pass. How does God then respond to pagan worship and all what we're seeing resurfacing today in different forms? They come with new names and new titles, and they come with dress up, look nice, and so on. Well, Exodus 34:14 tells us, "Thou shalt worship no other God," we know that, "for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God." Deuteronomy 4:24 says, "For the Lord Yahweh is a consuming fire, even a jealous God." So whenever we touch on idolatry, God feels jealous. So if that tree is a symbol of idolatry, you have it in your house. I wonder if God is smiling when you have it in your house. I wonder if God is smiling when you have that erected in your house and think it's just a little innocent tree. And you know, you have all the gifts around it, lying out, and Christmas morning coming open, everybody's happy and all of that. Well, then you just bring gifts to Semiramis too under the green tree. Semiramis, the mother of Nimrod. Some stories say they married his mother. So this is nothing, it's not so innocent. "Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them, for I the Lord am a jealous God." He repeats over and over that he is jealous when it comes to this idolatry. "For the Lord thy God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against you and destroy you from off the face of the earth." Deuteronomy 6:15. Brethren, the road ahead, as we all know it, is paved with peril and danger. This continuing fascination that we see with everything that God forbids, that is where the fascination is. Everything that God forbids, the curious eye of humanity want to check it out for themselves. We have to know. We are curious. And what it leads to? Distance from God. Distance from God. A few years ago, and I think it still happens today, I started hearing a relatively new term being used when it comes to religion. It's called the post-Christian era. The post-Christian era. You may come across it from time to time if you read religious material or any social science subject. And what it really means is that Christianity is no longer the majority visible or civil religion of society. It's no longer it. And that is why you have some countries talking about they're creating a secular society. So they must be free from anything to do with religion. Right here in our own backyard, Quebec has started that. They're creating a secular society. Religion doesn't play any role in it because we're now living in the post-Christian era. So, values and certain values that we have gone through the door. But it's a reality, as we see some of what I just outlined a while ago, that's going on around us. Society is getting more and more secular, and God doesn't really have any influence, or they're trying to make God less influential, that people will not turn, especially to the true God. Remember Mark said, Religion is the opium of the people. They know how religion plays an important role in all our lives. And once you can move religion generally, then you talk about Christianity, you know, religion, all the religions, once you can move that out of the society, and their eyes are always on the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's not so much the other religion, but the God of the Bible. Because I don't believe they're going to stop until they can get your Bible to be classified as hate literature. I don't think they're going to stop. That quest continues. British journalist Ferdinand Mount, he says, I quote, "The society that is now emerging bears an astonishing resemblance, almost eerily so, to the ways in which the Greeks and Romans lived." In other words, they're emphasizing physical pleasures, gratuitous violence, unlimited sexual freedom, multiple gods, and no sense of guilt. In other words, they don't feel guilty that this is wrong. No sense of guilt. The famous T.S. Eliot, that social critic, this is what he said 80 years ago. He said, "The future of Western societies rests with a contest between Christianity and what he called modern paganism." 80 years ago he said that. This is exactly what is going on. And another historian, Carl F. Henry, he warned that neo-pagans were threatening to undermine the foundations of Western civilization, and that the already visible result of their ideas was moral and intellectual decay paralleled only by Pompey and Solomon. If these are not words, I'm not sure, I don't know what it is. It's on us, brethren, but you know what? I don't get uptight over it. I don't get worked up over it and say we have to do something. Do what? How is my redemption and your redemption going to happen if these things don't come to pass? That's the fundamental question. Our mission is to preach the gospel of hope to a dying world. And it's up to them if they want to accept it. I had a friend of mine wrote me this week and said, you know what? Somebody really blushed and asked me because I tried to push the Bible into his face and tell him he must accept Jesus Christ as Lord. And said the person almost get violent. I said, why did you do that? Why do you push Bible in people's face and warning them to accept Jesus Christ? That's not your role. Not your role. That's, you see that lack of understanding out there how God works. You preach it and let it fall where it may fall. Can't do anything. No one can come to him unless the Father draws him. We have to get an understanding where, you know, you still don't understand. Deuteronomy 18:19. When you come into the land that the Lord your God has given you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who burns his son or his daughter as an offering. That's what they were doing with Molech. Anyone who practices divination or tells fortunes or interpret omens. I walk down to Young Street all the time and I see them there lying out, reading palm and well, bright light flickering and, oh, can tell you your fortune. Fortune, my foot. Just contain your, you know, when you see these things happen and people spending money on that. So anyone who practices divination or tells fortunes or interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, or a medium, or a necromancer, or who inquires of the dead, for whosoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord, and because these abominations to the Lord, your God, is driving them out before you, you shall be blameless before the Lord. Romans 1:18, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their righteousness suppress the truth. Wrath is coming for those who suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools. We have so many fools around today, claiming to be wisdom thinkers or philosophers. They became fools. Became fools. When Deuteronomy 12, I'm winding up here quickly. Deuteronomy 12:29, when the Lord your God cuts off before you the nations whom you go in to dispossess, and you dispossess them, and you dwell in their land, take care that you not be ensnared to follow them after they have destroyed before you, and that you do not inquire about their God, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? That's the same thing Christianity went and did. Borrow these abominable practices. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abominable thing that the Lord hates, they have done for their gods. And they have burned their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. Everything that I command you, you shall be careful to do. To do. Acts 19:18. Also, many of those who were not believers came, confessing and divulging their practices. And a number of those who had practiced magic arts brought their books together and burned them in the sight of all. And they counted the value of them and found it came to 50,000 pieces of silver. So the word of the Lord continued to increase and prevail mightily. So these are warnings, brethren, about these practices that we still have with us today. Stay far from them. The biggest one, we're in the midst of that season right now. Don't worship it that way. The people are corrupt. 1 Corinthians 10:1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant, how that all our fathers were under the cloud, and all passed through the sea. All were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all eat the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. He is our rock. Whatever he says to do, we follow. We follow. Verse 5 says, but with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. And verse 9 says, neither let us tempt Christ, as some have also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents, or by serpents. And I'm going to close with before that, 2 Corinthians 11:1. I wish you would bear with me a little foolishness. Do bear with me, for I feel a divine jealousy for you, since I betrothed you to one husband and to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. But I'm afraid that the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts, and will be led astray from sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus, that's what was changed at the beginning, another Jesus than the one we proclaim, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you receive, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough. Well, indeed, I consider that I'm not in the least inferior to these super apostles. Even if I'm unskilled in speaking, I am not so in knowledge. Indeed, in every way, we have made this plain to you in all things. And this is the verse I want to end with. Same 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 15. Or 2 Corinthians 11, sorry, verse 13. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise of his servants, they also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds. And that's where we want to leave it. Their ends will correspond with their deeds. So brethren, I know I could go on much longer, didn't realize I didn't cover some, but nevertheless, I think you got the gist of what I'm saying, that he didn't come, the incarnate one, didn't come as flesh, the Emmanuel. He did come in the Bible as God, but not on December 25th. Something else happened on that day. Abominable practices were celebrated on that day. So don't substitute that day and whitewash it and come and say, well, this is the day we're going to choose. Choose it for you. You can choose your birthday for somebody else. You know, I really find it comical. Can you choose somebody else's birthday? Or how would they like if somebody choose their own birthday and say, we're going to celebrate it that day? You know. So let us stay pure to the truth of God. Revelation 3:7 and says, and to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write these things, said the one that is holy, the one that is holy, he that is true, he that has the key of David, he that opens, no man shuts, and shuts, and no man opens. Yes, he came as a lamb to the slaughter. So in obedience to that command, we come before him on the Passover to observe his birth. Because that is what he said we should do. Not, as I said, observe his death rather, not his birth. So let us continue, brethren, in that trend. And as I said, over this period, don't get uptight with people and cross with them and tell them we're going to kick over their trees or his bread. Don't. Be polite. Be diplomatic. You know better, and God expects those who know better to do better. But never compromise on your belief.
Recording stopped.